It's now time for the Security Savings Bank Food Forum Part 2, brought to you by FS, Monsanto Agronomy Center, Illinois Soybean Association, Illinois Corn Growers Association, the City of Monmouth, the Warren Henderson Farm Bureau, Illinois Farm Families, and High Noon Barbecue. It's time now for the Security Savings Bank Food Forum in partnership with FS. Let's go live to Security Savings Bank. Security Savings Bank Food Forum Part 2 in partnership with FS. Today's coverage is on AM 1330 WRAM, AM 1590 WAIK, AM 1560 WBYS, and AM 860 KWPC. So very pleasant good morning to Muscatine, Iowa, Canton, Illinois, Galesburg, Illinois, and Monmouth, Illinois. Again, coverage today is brought to you by our partners, Security Savings Bank, FS, Monsanto Agronomy Center, Illinois Soybean Association, the Illinois Corn Growers Association, the City of Monmouth, Warren Henderson Farm Bureau, Illinois Farm Families, and lunch today is courtesy of High Noon Barbecue. Thanks, everyone, for participating in our event. Let's turn to the president of Security Savings Bank, Stan Jinks, for a message.
Thank you. On behalf of Security Savings Bank, we welcome all of our panelists and the listening audience to Food Forum Part 2. Last year's Food Forum was such a success, it was necessary to continue this discussion about our food production, food research both in science and consumer habits, food safety, food labeling, and consumer information. Something as important as food deserves much attention, and we want to personally thank Vanessa Wetterling and Prairie Radio Communications for their commitment to agriculture. I think I speak for everyone around this table in that Vanessa needs to be recognized for her programming through the radio stations of quality agricultural programs and the pursuit of good and valuable information as it pertains to educating the radio audience on a topic that is of significant importance to the world, to this nation, and most notably, this community. Vanessa, thank you for your service to the ag community and for involving Security Savings Bank to be a part of this food forum. We've all heard the phrase, knowledge is power. One of the definitions of knowledge is the sum of what is known, the body of truth, information and principles acquired by mankind. And I would lift out of that definition the body of truth. In this day and age of 24-hour news, we are exposed to a lot of information, possibly some that is not well researched or backed by fact and logic. Therefore, it is necessary that good and truthful information be provided, and that is the purpose of today's food forum. I look forward to hearing from everyone around this table that is knowledgeable and dedicated to the future of agriculture and mankind as we learn how agriculture is being improved through scientific research and commitment to responsible cultivation and production of plants and animals. Security Savings Bank is proud of this ag community. Again, thank you, Vanessa and Prairie Radio Communications, for developing this program to encourage quality communication between the consumer and the agriculture community. Welcome, everyone, to Security Savings Bank.
Thank you very much, Stan Jinks, our president of Security Savings Bank. Also, I'd like to recognize our producers today. Back in the studio, Mike Weaver. He is producing our program. Our engineers today include Jack Toll on the board, our social media developer, Nicole Trigo, and, of course, David Clockingay, recording this broadcast, so it'll be made available on our website at a later date. Want to turn to Jared Kunkel, our president of the Warren Henderson Farm Bureau. It's really his idea as well. We kind of came up with this thought process together. And Jared, thanks for doing a great job with this community.
Well, just thank you, Vanessa. Like Stan said, you know, you do so much for the agriculture community in our area and beyond and reach a lot of people. And we just thank you again. And this is, you know, last year, like Stan said, this was a good conversation starter with a lot of people. And just want to have a nice conversation with the people out there and know that we're not hiding anything. We just want to kind of get our facts out, you know, not missed. So,
absolutely. Jared Kunkel, our Warren Henderson Farm Bureau President. Delos Yonke is here today with RFD Illinois. Delos does a great job as well. We appreciate you being here for coverage today. Also, our Managing Director of the Farm Bureau, Carol Ricketts, is here today as well. Let's meet our distinguished panel of guests. We have a terrific group for you. I'll start on my right so you can picture the table here. We have our President and CEO of the Illinois Agricultural Leadership Foundation, Mr. Don Norton. Good morning, Don.
Hi, Vanessa. How are you?
Doing great. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, let's see. I'm the president of the Illinois Ag Leadership Foundation. We run a two-year agriculture leader development program, and our 481 living graduates are testimony to how important leadership is in agriculture. You probably know many of them. One of them, Ron Moore, is seated at the table today, the director of the Department of Agriculture in Illinois. Philip Nelson's a graduate of ours, and others serving where agriculture really needs to be represented, on the county boards and the school boards and everywhere. Prior to that, I taught college communications, was a professor at Western Illinois University and some other schools. Also have done a lot of teaching of advertising and marketing communications, and we'll share a little bit about that as well.
And you may recognize Don's voice as the voice of Farm King.
For almost 21 years now, I've been doing Farm King commercials. And notice how the voice just kind of goes up when I say Farm King like that. So, yes, they're, of course, based in Macomb and have six stores in the Western Illinois and Eastern Iowa area. It's always fun, too, to do that.
Thank you, Don Norton. Also with us today, Tom Prince. He is a professor at Monmouth College, also a part of the Food Security Initiative Steering Program at the college. Tom, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little bit about this Food Security Initiative.
Our Food Security Initiative at Monmouth College is an opportunity for us to develop a dialogue with our students in a field of study looking at both local and global food security issues. From production to what is the body of truth on a lot of things we hear on food, what is possible throughout the world. Through our president, Dr. Clarence Wyatt, and along with 30 universities and colleges across the country, and in conjunction with the United Nations, we are part of the PUSH initiative, which is Presidents United to Solve Hunger, which is a worldwide initiative, but we also try to bring this to the local perspective with our students. We have hired three additional professors, one in anthropology, one in biology, and one in economics, to study food issues and to approach this topic from those three perspectives. It's a very ambitious program, and one which we think offers our students that ability to perceive food as it should be, as a very important global issue.
Okay, thank you very much, Tom Prince. Katrina Howard is with us. She is a certified dietitian with Hy-Vee, and we're glad to have you here today. Tell us about you.
Hi, thanks for having me. Well, I'm a registered dietitian at the Hy-Vee in Galesburg on East Main. I've been with the company almost 2 years now, and I'm there to answer nutrition questions for our customers in the store. I do tours based on needs, as in, you know, diabetes, heart health. I do cooking classes in the store, but I'm also pretty active in the community doing presentations in the community and cooking demos and things like that.
And you've also been on the air with us before, helping us understand marketing and labeling and have a good idea about that as well.
Yes, I do.
We look forward to hearing from you. Tim Myers is with us. He is our Illinois Pork Producers Interim Director, but also Communications Director and a friend of the radio station. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Vanessa. Glad to be back again. Always a great group to be involved in, and appreciate the opportunity to be back. As you said, I'm on staff of the Illinois Pork Producers. Been with them for 16 years, actually. Started out as a County Farm Bureau Manager, and when I started in the ag industry. So I grew up on a farm in Adams County, still farm there part-time. So just have been very glad to be part of the Illinois Pork Producers and the industry in Illinois. And Illinois ranks fourth in the country in pork production, so very important part of our state's economy. But my role, we've been doing a lot to reach out to consumers, talk to them about misperceptions on the pork industry and a lot of issues that we've been dealing with there. So we've had a lot of efforts working with Illinois farm families and other ag groups in Illinois as well, too. So just look forward to the discussion today.
Thank you very much, Tim Myers. Terry Ewing is with us, representing Security Savings Bank as well. She is our Vice President of Ag Lending Services. Terry, thanks for being here and supporting the program.
Good morning, Vanessa. Thank you for having the opportunity to be on this food forum. Agriculture is a very integral part of our community and our state and our country, and I've enjoyed the ability to work with our customers with our production agriculture regarding crops and livestock, and I believe that this is very beneficial for the community to hear how we are very diligent in our process of providing safe food to our community and our world.
Thank you, Terry Ewing. Dan Zink is with us today. He's our general manager with Stone Seed Company, Stone Seed Group. Thanks for coming, a newcomer to the program, but a friend of agriculture.
Well, thank you, Vanessa. I appreciate the opportunity. Really look forward, and I want to applaud you for taking the initiative to do this. I think this is really important, so thank you.
Tell us a little bit about you, Dan.
So first, I'm a dad, and then I work for Monsanto on a brand called Stone Seed, and then I'm a farmer. So those are the three hats I most proudly wear. And my background has always been agriculture-related. Pretty extensive background in the research side of things, agronomic research. I actually had the opportunity to be in the Monmouth area for about 4 or 5 years at the research farm. So I have a lot of familiar faces around the table, so thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. Mike Adams is with us, our longtime host of AgriTalk, Farm Journal Media, also Agriculture Advocate. You do a great job promoting agriculture. This subject very near and dear to your heart, Mike.
It really is, Vanessa, and thank you for the opportunity. This is kind of what we do on a national basis on our show quite often, talk about food issues and the perceptions about food and what farmers are dealing with. Farmers need to know what their customers are thinking and asking, and we need to communicate. I think the number one challenge for agriculture today is communicating its message to consumers that don't understand what they do, and they've heard something that is very misleading, oftentimes just out and out wrong. And we have complicated food in this country. We have such an abundance of food and technology. We have managed to complicate food. All you have to do is walk through the grocery store aisle, and you see all the choices a consumer has, and no wonder they have questions and what they've heard here and read there. And so we have to kind of sort through the clutter here and really get the message through and show them and tell them why what our farmers are producing is a safe product that's good for them and their families.
Okay, thanks so much, Mike Adams. Next to Mike is Levi Porter. He's an ag loan officer here at Security Savings Bank. Welcome to your first event here.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and, I guess, help spread the word about the facts of food and that we produce. I have grown up on a farm in Fulton County and plan on going back someday. For right now, I'm working here at the bank. This is coming up on my third year being here.
Okay, thanks so much, Levi Porter. And today, WBYS, you're home in the Fulton County area, so that's good. Next to him is Katie Pratt from the Illinois Farm Families. Katie, thank you for coming. Tell us a little bit about you.
Thanks for having me again. It feels like family to come to these events anymore because we see everybody often. My family and I farm up in Dixon in Lee County. We raise corn, soybeans, and seed corn, and right now we're planting between raindrops is what it's been feeling like the last week or so, and sleet. Yesterday we had sleet. I blog about our farm and about food and farm issues at IllinoisFarmGirl.wordpress.com and try to share the farm story that way. Illinois Farm Families is a program that started, gosh, maybe 5 years ago now. Is that Ron shaking his head? Yes. So 5 years ago now with the sole purpose of connecting non-farmers with farmers. And they've done a tremendous job in bringing through their program called City Moms, mom bloggers and just people interested about food out to farms on field trips, essentially. And just recently, I was able to attend with a graduate group of that program, a tour of the Monsanto Research Facility down in St. Louis. And that was fascinating. And it was fascinating for me, but it was also fascinating to see the questions that were asked and answered and the light bulbs that were going off. And it just proves the point that face-to-face communication about farm and food issues is so powerful and so necessary.
Thank you very much, Katie Pratt. Jared Kunkel, Warren Henderson Farm Bureau. Tell us a little bit about you, Jared.
I've been the Warren Henderson Farm Bureau president for, well, finishing up my second year here. Been involved for the last 4 years. The last year, we, with Knox County, has tried to start a more Illinois Farm Families, but local, to get the word out, you know, kind of in our local area. So I also farm here in Warren County and have two kids.
Did you grow up on a farm?
I did not. I grew up in a subdivision. I've just always wanted to farm, so...
There
so,
you go.
So far, making it happen. We'll see. So.
Ron Moore is with us, also from the American Soybean Association and Illinois Farm Families, local farmer as well. Ron, thank you for being here. Let our listeners, our non-farm listeners, know a little bit about you.
Well, thank you, Vanessa, for the opportunity to come here again. And lifelong resident of Warren County, live in the house that I grew up in, and married a girl from that I met at Western Illinois University, and she lived in Chicago, and now she's a very happy farm wife and mother of three sons, and one of our sons came back to farm a year ago, so we're happy to have a fourth-generation farmer producing food in Warren County.
And you've also hosted the City Moms at your place as well.
Yes, we have. That was quite an experience. They asked an enormous amount of questions and climbed over. FS had a sprayer there with a 120-foot boom, and they were amazed at the technology that we use and on the farm, that they had no idea that we were able to use GPS and positioning and electronics to shut off our sprayers and our seed meters so we don't overplant and overapply. It was amazing that, like Katie said, you have to have that one-on-one conversation, and they understand if you are honest with them about what we do.
And what's the website? As we have folks listening today, they may want to be perusing the website.
Watchusgrow.org.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ron Moore. Rob Elliott, our first Vice President-elect National Corn Growers. Rob, welcome to the program. Tell us about you.
Thank you, Vanessa. Thank you for the opportunity to be here, and thank you for what you've done in promoting the correct message here as we relate to the farm and the food. I grew up here close to town, part of a farm operation with my two brothers, Rick and Dan, right here in the Monmouth, Warren County area. So had a long career in agribusiness, as well as I've spent about 10 years on the Illinois Corn Growers Board and several on the National Corn Growers Board. As you mentioned, next fall I'll become president, spend a year as president of National Corn Growers, which represent about 42,000 corn growers across the U.S. And one of the founding members of the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance, which is kind of, as a food dialogue goes, a key component of telling the right message. I scribbled down here one thing that's been a fairly significant learning for me. And the last time we were here, we always talk about tell your story. We need to do a better job of telling your story. And I think that's probably not correct today. And the more correct approach is be part of the conversation. So to me, that's become a big watchword of how we promote and talk about and get to a better learning point of what food's all about. So thank you again for the opportunity.
Thanks for being here as well. That's Rob Elliott. Also, DeLos Yankee is with us from RFD Radio, over 80 affiliates in the state of Illinois, including WBYS and WREM. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you very much for the invitation, and congratulations again on a great panel that you brought together. You know, I've been on a kind of a kick recently. We have such fondness for sausage. We love our steaks, but our opinions, and when I say our, I'm saying as a public, you know, our opinions of the animals and the people that produce those don't necessarily connect well. You know, we love the food, but we don't necessarily think about where it comes from or who is involved in doing that. So I really like what Rob's thinking. Instead of, you know, banging people over the head with facts, to be engaged, part of the conversation, I think that's a great thing, and so glad to be part of that today.
Thank you, DeLos Yankee with RFD Illinois. I got to tell you, folks, as I'm sitting here getting text messages, I'll say a good morning to Letitia in DeKalb. We've got some moms listening from that area this morning. Good morning to Kevin Serrar, local restaurant owner. Several restaurants is very interested in hearing about the information today. And good morning to all the non-farmers. We're glad you could join us this morning for this program. Let's get started. I'm going to start with Don Norton and Mike Adams. You're on deck. Let's talk a little bit about how we got to the reason we're having the event today. How did the perception of food change over time?
This, if you'll bear with me for the next 4 hours, I'll tell you the history of the world and the head of the pin. It's so interesting. You know, I guess the older I get, the more fun it is to put this in perspective. But if you look at the convergence of trends, just in the last 100 years, relative to agriculture, it is absolutely amazing. Let's start with the fact that I can do what I do and I don't have to raise my own food. You know, my grandfather worked on a farm in Iowa and then went to become an ice man in the city of Chicago. And so he left the farm, you know, a couple generations ago. And that's the story of most Americans. They don't know a farm. And to the benefit of our country, they don't know a farm because they've been able to do other things that have made our country great. To the detriment, perhaps, of agriculture, because as people become more and more removed from the story of how their food is grown, they become more skeptical and have more questions. I think one of the other trends is product marketing. Different products have grown. As a child, I remember going into a grocery store, and I don't think it was much bigger than this 20 by 30 room we're in right now. But now grocery stores are huge, and they have tens of thousands of products. And you have to differentiate product A from product B, even though they are substantially the same. And so you'll see labels put on products that are supposed to make them stand out. But what they actually mean is, well, sometimes up for debate. And what their inherent benefits are probably negligible. There's not much difference one product to the other. But you wouldn't know that from looking to see if it's low fat or light or all of these other things that we put on products. I think one of the other trends is one that was pointed out by Texas A&M in a book on agricultural leadership. Came out a couple years ago. And it said, you know, the farmer inherently is not a boaster. If you think about it, farmers have never really been big on telling their own story. Many farmers worked alone for many, many years on a tractor or raising animals, and it wasn't something that they would want to go tell everybody about at the end of the day. You couple that with the growth of what I'll call special interest groups that primarily are anti-agriculture I think of people on television who might be promoting a book or something that they've written that slams agriculture. And I look at that and I say, you know, that's not really fair because, you know, you need to tell the other side of that story. But agriculture historically hasn't been good at telling its side of the story. The other point is we've become a society that does not understand nutrition. It was funny, I was at a Rotary Club meeting this morning, and we had an exchange student from Sweden, and she is just finishing up her year in America. And one of her parting comments was, you know, Americans just don't eat healthy food. And it kind of came out of the blue, you know. I don't think anybody was expecting that. But compared to what she eats, she said, for one thing, that when she first got here, she ordered a small pizza, and she had like a quarter of it and was full. And a small pizza, I don't think I can remember the last time I ordered a small pizza because I want the jumbo size or whatever. And so her perspective was really enlightening to me, and I'm glad we have a nutritionist on the panel because I think that's something that America really needs to look at. So all of these concepts have converged at this moment in time. And I've saved the best for last, and that's something our friend Katie Pratt is well aware of, and that is social media. Now anybody can publish anything, whether it's true or not, and can begin a discussion of something they know very little about. And so that's why it's important for us to be here today. And as Rob said, you know, we don't want to throw information at people. We want to engage in this discussion. But we do need to have our side heard. I think that's really important. As we go forward in discussing the food issue and food security, I think agriculture needs to have that voice, and it needs to be strong.
Okay, Don, Mike?
Follow up on several of the points Don made. I think what we've seen, we've gotten to this point because of our abundance of food, the success we've had in producing food, the ability to provide these choices to consumers, the envy of the world, and now all of a sudden we have people wanting to attack that very system that has made us the envy of the world and would pretty much dismantle it if they had the opportunity. It seems like we live in a society of extremes, and if you have a product, say a non-GMO product, a lot of groups aren't content on just promoting their product. They have to demonize the other side in the process. It's like, we're good, they're bad, instead of, hey, got two good choices here, make whichever one you want. We're in extremes in our society. we deal with perceptions. Perceptions are constantly changing. We have taken great comfort over the years in agriculture that, for the most part, polls have showed that people still trust farmers. And I think, for the most part, that's still the case. But the perception of a farmer has dramatically changed in my lifetime. And if you ask a lot of consumers now about a farmer, they have now been programmed to think of a big factory and someone that doesn't care about the land or doesn't care about the environment or doesn't care about anything but making money. And so the perceptions change, just like the perception of a policeman, the perception of a teacher, or the perception of a lot of different occupations that when I was growing up you held on a pedestal. Now society's tried to attack those and bring them down, and we're dealing with some of that in production agriculture today. We're seeing, I think, maybe a tipping point. We've had a society up to now that's been told that technology is bad for agriculture. Like every other profession, every other way of life in this country embraces technology, but for some reason they expect the people that produce our food not to use it. I mean, we have a society that can't take enough drugs, it seems, or enough antibiotics for everything, but they don't want us to use them in animals. They want a technology that fixes everything, but don't use GMOs in agriculture. I mean, it's amazing how we've gotten to this point, and so now we're battling those perceptions. We do need to tell our story in a way, in a conversation like Rob said, because people have been talking about farmers for years now, so instead of talking with farmers. And so we have to get involved and get engaged in that. We have something going on now, science versus marketing. And it's a situation where you can be right, and you can have all the facts, and you can have all the science, and that doesn't win the argument today because people aren't listening to that. They're tuned out to that. So you have to find a better way of communicating that message. We may have seen a tipping point in what Chipotle has done. Chipotle is very successful, but they maybe crossed the line. They maybe pushed a little too far, came out with their big, we are non-GMO in our menu. Well, they got raked over the coals in the media. Instead of the media supporting them, as they have on most everything, the media called them on it and said, no, wait a minute, you're not totally GMO-free. And, oh, by the way, you're out there marketing yourself as this food with integrity, and you're out there saying you're the best and healthiest choice. By the way, that burrito has a couple thousand calories in it. We'll just overlook that because we feel good that it might not have any GMOs in it. You know, that's marketing. And so we're dealing with that kind of perception that's going on in the marketplace today. Now you're seeing more and more stories that before either totally ignored the fact that GMOs are safe and there have been no proven problems with them. You either didn't see it in a story or you saw it buried. Now, if you watch the national coverage of these GMO stories, like the Chipotle story, more and more of them are pointing out these things have been tested for years and years and years, and there have been no cases of harm come from them. So we were kidding about this earlier, Vanessa. Maybe if we came out with a diet GMO or a non-calorie GMO, the public would jump on that if you had the right marketing campaign, because that's what we've become. Our society gets influenced. I think it's amazing how effective they have been, because I still feel the majority of Americans, if you look, as in most things, whether it's politics or sports or whatever, you have people that are firmly entrenched in a position on one side or the other, and then you have this group of people in the middle that get moved by these marketing campaigns. And I think most of those people in the middle still primarily are looking at price when they go to the grocery store because they are concerned about what it costs. And it's only the people that can afford to have some of these debates and say, I'll pay more for some of these things. Well, then they get involved in a lot of those discussions, where most people are of the assumption, if it's in my grocery store, if it's in the meat case, it's safe, and I'm not going to worry about too much beyond that because I have to be able to afford putting that meal on the table. Not that they're not concerned, but they're assuming, they're working from a kind of a level of assurance or belief that it's going to be safe, and then they can move up or down on the price chain. So I think this is what we're dealing with, but we have to be careful. We have, I think, minority groups out there that sound bigger than they are, because they get into the media, they get the right coverage and the right attention, and it sounds much bigger than they are. The fact that the national mainstream media has called somebody on an advertising campaign, I think, is an encouraging sign. They actually said, wait a minute, let's kind of look at what you're saying here beyond just what sounds good. And that may be a sign of something positive moving forward. I hope so.
Okay, thanks very much, Mike Adams. Rob Elliott, National Corn Growers Association, also local farmer. As Mike mentioned, that group in the middle, they're also influenced by media, social media, television programs, and even education to some degree. How you guys have been having discussions over the years, you've had groups. How are you guys working in conjunction with that group in the middle to help inform them or at least answer their questions?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Vanessa, I think the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance certainly is one area that or a group that's brought the livestock folks, all the commodity organizations like corn and soybeans, it's brought agribusiness together. So one common theme that they've got is talking about food and the food dialogues. And I would tend to fully agree with Mike that science for us in agriculture has normally ruled the day, but what has been proven is science is not what's moving the opinion or the perception, it's emotion. So how do we share that value kind of situation with the consumer out there? We seem like we live in a fairly affluent soundbite world where we agree or disagree with the headline. It doesn't really matter the background, but I heard the headline. And I think that's kind of what we're dealing with here a little bit. So not an easy solution to a fairly big issue.
Ron Moore, how about from the Illinois Soybean, American Soybean, and Farm Families? How did we get to the point that we're at today, and what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I agree with everything has been said already, but I guess from my perspective, if you go back two generations, when I started farming, we were told, you might get sued if somebody comes on your farm and trips and falls, so you don't, don't let anybody on your farm. And so for 20, 30 years, we kind of, farmers did that. And now we've come to the conclusion that the consuming public doesn't know what we do or why we do what we do. So we have to change our mindset to have people come to our farm and be proud of the fact that we're farmers, we're producing food for the world, and then have that conversation like Rob's talking about and explain to them why we use herbicides, why we use GMOs, why we ear tag our cattle to keep the flies off of them in the summertime. And so we have to have that conversation. And so over the last few years, we've developed the Illinois Farm Families Coalition along with all the commodity groups and Farm Bureau in Illinois. That program has been wildly successful. It's just amazing how you can change people's perception when you have that conversation with them. And we're also working with both the Illinois Soybeans and the American Soybean Association, working with the field-to-market programs, talking about the sustainability aspect of what producers in the United States, how we are sustainable and all the things that we're doing. We're working with a group out of the University of Wisconsin called the Field Rise Network. It's another avenue that we're trying to get the word out to consumers about how farmers are doing a very good job of producing food sustainably. So there's not one silver bullet that's going to change every consumer's mind. You just have to continue to have this conversation, continue to invite people to your farm and talk about what we do in agriculture.
Go ahead, Mike.
I can follow up on that. I always find great comparisons between farmers and farming and churches. If you go to any church, I'd say in rural America, what's the conversation they all have? How do we get more people? How do we convince them they ought to come to church? Doesn't it sound like what we're talking about in agriculture? You can't beat them over the head. I mean, if you go pounding away, it turns people off. Rob, kind of do what you're saying. You can have all the facts. I can give you all kinds of facts of why you ought to be in church, but that isn't. But if you can get them there, talk with them, get that kind of a relationship, that appeals to more people. We're kind of on parallel paths here, I think. And how we best communicate that. What do we see churches doing? Let's put up the biggest screens, have the loudest bands. Let's look like we're really modern and we're in touch with the millennials, and that's what. And some of that works, some of that doesn't. And we're kind of sorting through it here. Like you said, Ron, there's no one way to do it. But I think what we're finally seeing, agriculture came late to this party. We weren't willing because we thought, if we're not doing anything wrong, why do we have to be out there defending ourselves? So we're behind. We are trying to catch up, and that's very hard to do. But I'm encouraged by these programs that we have, the use of social media for all of its, pitfalls that are out there. But we are seeing agriculture, I think, finally step up to the plate to explain to people what's on their plate is safe.
Tim Myers with the Illinois Pork Producers, and you've been there over 15 years with them. Pork is really has taken a lot of beatings as well, all the way back to the certain generations about trichinosis, and there for a while it was, don't eat pork, you could get this, but no, we found out if we cook it, we're good to go. Then came along the H1N1, and I'm probably forgetting some others, but H1N1 was referred to in the media as swine flu. That was confusing to the people in the middle who have no idea about agriculture. Talk about that effect and how you also overcame that as the hog herd. We are improving each day and getting better.
Well, you bet, Vanessa. I think, like I said, there has been a lot of misperceptions about pork and how pork is raised, and it seems like it's just the issue of the day. What's out there, whether it's swine flu or PDV or whatever it is that we're dealing with, but. I think it goes back to like we said, that just people have the fear of the unknown and not have the understanding. And for the pork industry, we've used a lot of technology over the last few years and changed the way we've raised pigs for the consumer's benefit and really at the request of consumers of wanting a leaner product. And we talk about the nutrition aspects. And so, as an industry, we moved a lot of our production inside to better care for the animals and the genetics and the feed that we're using, and all those things combined to make a very good, high-quality product. But it's much different than the way Grandpa and Grandma raised pigs out in the lot in the mud and those things. So the change is sometimes seen as a bad thing because they don't understand what, all that we're doing and the technology we're using. So it is that connecting with people. And I've been involved where we've had the moms come out to some hog farms, and we've taken them into the buildings, and gestation crates is something that's been in the news a lot and been debated and had perceptions about it. And it's always interesting to see these moms' reaction to seeing the sows in the gestation stalls and then talking to them afterwards about it. But the number one thing that comes out of that is when they talk to the farmer and they understand the care that they have for the animals, the passion that they have for what they do on a daily basis, the facts about what the stalls do or don't do kind of go out the window, because they say, I trust the Gould family. They obviously care for these animals. They're here 365 days a year. If they think this is the best thing for those animals, then I'm okay with that. So it's really getting that trust with the farmers and the consumers. And we've got the research papers that show that, there's really no difference between the gestation and pen gestation. But, we didn't need to tell them that. We just need to make that connection, have them see the passion and build that trust with the farmer. So I think, a lot of times when we're doing those conversations, is how do we get our farmers in an opportunity to just have that conversation and make that connection and like I said, not be so worried about the research paper that we got to give to them, but just connect with them and say, hey, I'm a dad too, and I'm concerned about the food that I feed my family, and this is what we've been doing on our farm. So, it's an ongoing process, and we can't stop or give up, unfortunately.
Tim, I've often thought this gets back to perceptions, marketing, and messaging. If we could have gone back a few years and the pork industry put out some videos in the national media showing sows laying on and suffocating baby pigs, or two sows attacking each other, fighting over food, and an animal not getting to eat because it wasn't as aggressive as the others. If we'd have shown that footage, there would have been this public cry, I think, of, we need a system that would protect those animals against that very thing. And we could have said, we've got it. We've come up with this gestation stall idea. and people would have gone, wow, yeah, good idea. But the message would have been, you were protecting the animals. Instead, the activist groups and the media jumped on it and portrayed your industry, the pork industry, as being you didn't care about the animals, and what you were doing was only about your bottom line and not about taking care of the animals. That message got out there, and now you're trying to you're taking steps to overcome that, but facts alone, as you say, won't win the day.
Right, you're right, and it is that, you know, when we're reacting to those things, then we're always behind. So I think so we talk about this, how do we be more proactive to have those conversations and be engaged, whether it's social media or all those different things that we can find ways to engage and continue the dialogue.
And I'm glad, Mike, that you jumped in there, because today, as we compiled data the last few weeks and months for this program, we promised we would describe some of these terms, such as gestation stalls. What are they? What do they mean to our non-farmers? That's important, because they're not sure of that term. And, Rob, oftentimes you've talked about our lingo that we use in this industry and being able to break that down into what exactly we're doing. Go ahead, Katie Pratt.
Well, I just want to add what Mike was saying. So if you remember, last year or 2 years ago, maybe the blizzard that hit South Dakota late spring, and ranchers out there lost their entire herds of cattle. And there was an outcry, particularly on social media, of, well, why were these animals outside? And I thought there was such irony in that outcry, because that's what we've heard is they don't want people don't want animals in barns. They're supposed to be outside. It's in nature. And so ranchers had to explain why their animals are outside, why they are pastured all year long. And so your point to, you know, if we could tell people this, well, that is the story, and yet that wasn't received. Well, we need to save them. Like, why weren't you protecting them from this blizzard? I think also to follow up on a few other of the points that have been made too is that, you know, these conversations with non-farmers and consumers, this is not about necessarily changing a person's mind. It's about providing information. I think that we are so blessed to have the choices that we have in this country in terms of our food. And farmers are blessed to have the choices that we have to raise the food that is best for our farm and our family's business. If you want a particular food raised a certain way, you're probably going to get it, because there's going to be a farmer out there that's going to figure out how to do this and deliver it to the marketplace. So this isn't about changing minds, but providing information so that when you do make choices for your family in terms of food, and that's probably one of the biggest choices that parents, grandparents face when it comes to raising your kids. I'm a mom of two, and I know that I'm always sticking carrots and celery in their lunch boxes, and once in a while I sneak in a broccoli, and that never goes over really well, but I try. We want people to be able to make those decisions on fact and not fear. You should never be fearful of putting something in your grocery cart. You should never be fearful of serving something to your family. You should be very confident and comfortable that the food that American farmers and ranchers are raising for your family is safe. We have these procedures and processes in place to ensure that. And this conversation is about sharing that information.
DeLoss?
I think those are great comments, Katie. I'm thinking of a couple of things that have been said already. Ron, like you were talking about how we didn't want people on our farm. The St. Louis Science Center is putting together an ag exhibit outside of its location, which is just going to be fabulous. But from what I heard, the original designs included a brick silo. And I said to them, when I met a couple of designers, I said, the brick silo that was built on our family's farm went up in 1927. I have family in Indianapolis, and very close to where they live, there is a grocery store. I can't remember the name of it, but it is one of the, it's all marketing, natural and local, and this is healthier for you, blah, 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 blah. But all of their artwork includes a 1950s open phase 2-horsepower tractor, which, if at best, if it still runs, you'd put a blade on it and you'd grade your road with it, and that's all it could do. You know, why do we, you know, people go in with their tablets, with their shopping list on their tablets, and they expect the food supply to be back in the 1950s. And so it's an uphill battle. And like you were saying, Katie, we don't want to change people's minds, but there needs to be some information that we eat the food, we eat the same food too. And it's not like we have our own secret stash and this is what we're giving to the general public. So with that, being a Simpsons fan, I always remember the Simpsons episode where they made They tried to get Mr. Burns to eat the three-eyed fish next to the nuclear power plant. He wouldn't do it. You know, it's not like that for farmers. You know, we're eating the same food that we're producing. In fact, most people probably have a deep freeze that has either pork or beef from the very animals that we've been raising. So if that's safe enough for us to eat, then hopefully it is for everyone else. Unfortunately, that's not a good enough conversation. It's good enough for me, darn it. It should be good enough for you. There's got to be some sort of cooperation in there, too.
I think, too, it's that emotional connection. I don't know how many of us today can say, but so many people can say, well, I spent summers on my grandparents' farm. And when we were there, we got to ride on the fender of the tractor, and we played basketball in the barn. You know, that conjures up these wonderful emotional feelings. I have great feelings about my childhood on my farm, but my memories will not feed 9 billion people. And that number is a number we toss out a lot, and I know it's starting to fall on deaf ears. But you can't feed the world on memories, okay? Now, my kids, 10 and 7, they are creating their own memories on the farm, and they are involving cab tractors that have automatic shutoffs. They're safer in that tractor than I ever was riding on the fender with my dad down the road. And that was my memory. That doesn't make it safe. My kids' memory is in the safe tractor of what they're developing with their grandparents, and that's what gives food our emotional tie to food, is the memories and the experience of what that food is. So that's what we're battling, and I hate to use that word, but I think of what people feel when they eat food is how they look at it then.
Dan Zink is with us here from Fulton County, and with Monsanto and Stone Seed Group. Education is an area where our kids are finding out about some of the challenges that we're talking about today, where some of the information may not be 100% accurate, but it's getting pushed down onto them. Describe some of that that's happened, and especially with Monsanto. You've had documentaries come out that are, there's a lot of information there that's questionable.
Yeah, thank you, Vanessa. It's a challenge, let's face it. I'd like to look around the panel and ask everybody, how many change the oil in your car? You do it yourself versus take it to town. I take it to town. Why? It's easy. The cars have become so complex, I won't know how to change a spark plug. There's a complexity there. I grew up on a farm, changed oil for years, but it's gotten so complex, I trust someone else to do it for me. I trust someone else to provide that service, that information for me. So as we continue, as has been brought up several times, as we continue to look for sources of information, what historically does ag offer? They're very science-based decisions that are very complex. I've done research for 20 years. There's a lot of trials that go into this. So to Tim's point before, you said we provide a research paper. That's what we do. We provide a complete answer that should not, without a doubt, leave any doubt. I mean, you should know everything because we got this answer. We're very comfortable in that because that's how we make decisions. I'm not an auto mechanic. I couldn't begin to tell you when that light's flashing or it says check engine. I don't care what it means. Someone else is able to do that. If you tell me what it means, you tell me to go in and change this or that, wouldn't know how to do it anyhow, so I really don't care. So if I'm a consumer and I got a question about my food or I got a question about GMOs, and you give me a 15-page diatribe as to why they're safe, you know what I heard? I heard excuses. I didn't hear anything that reassured me or gives me any understanding or feel any confidence that you know what you're talking about. You're not just trying to cover yourself up. So I think our messaging needs to become more concise and more to the point as to the question the person's asking, not as to why we chose to use the GMO or why we chose to apply nitrogen this way or why we chose to do whatever we're discussing. The thing about it is it's not just any aspect of agriculture, it's every aspect of society. So I think we've got to keep that in mind, that it's just got to be simple. We have a bunch of people that are specialists. I have a brother that could tell you everything about electronics. He grew up on a farm. He doesn't know hardly anything about agriculture. He's 30 years removed. He has no clue what GMOs actually do. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's my job to make it simple for him. So I think from an educational aspect, the message has to become more concise. It has to become more to the point and not so broad. Because as scientists, we want to provide you every answer. As a dietitian, you want to be able to tell me everything as why it is. You know what? I just want to know if it's safe.
Mike Adams?
Here's part of the challenge. We're a skeptical society. When I grew up, if research came out of the U of I or a land-grant university, we believed it. Now people say, who funded that research? Where did the researchers get their money? Was it a grant from Monsanto? Did Monsanto influence it somehow, or the other companies making GMOs? Even our government agencies, if USDA approved, FDA approved, wait a minute. Was there somehow, were they bought off by the biochemical companies? I mean, we don't trust what used to be the third-party information now. So there's a skepticism. Some of that has been pushed by an activist agenda. But that's part of what we're dealing with. So that's why the facts and the studies and the research papers alone aren't going to win the argument, win the day. We have to be more concise. Let's face it, our attention span in this country is pretty short anymore. We're quick to move on to the very next thing. So that's why we have to be able to get in, get a point made, and move on, because that's what the consumer is doing. I just think the biggest part of this we brought on to ourselves. If biotech had started out with more direct consumer benefits right off the get-go, if we had things like your apples won't brown as quickly, or whatever product's going to stay on the shelf longer, be good. But we started off more with producer benefits because the public was saying you're using too many pesticides and too many chemicals. So we came up with a way to reduce that. And instead of the people saying, good job, they're saying, now, wait a minute, you know, are these things safe? And now when we do bring on these products like apples that stay good longer, we're bringing the baggage of the past misconceptions about biotech with us, and they're not quite as quick to accept them as I think they would have been early on. So again, we're playing catch up again.
Rob Elliott and Ron Moore, I want to back up for just a second. Mike mentioned the term biotechnology or biotech, and Dan also mentioned GMO. Let's stop for a second. GMO, it's become a dirty word, but it shouldn't be a dirty word. It's biotechnology. Kind of describe how this came about, the term itself, and what it really is.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, GMO was a 1980s or 90s Greenpeace term that came from the folks in Europe. So that's, I believe, the origination of that. But genetic modification does nothing more than what we've been doing with traditional plant or animal breeding for hundreds and thousands of years. So with technology, we've determined a better understanding of, let's say, a plant genome, what's the gene makeup, and in essence, we can do a better job of a breeding via genetic modification. So it's really no more complicated than that. But if you think of the term genetically modified organism, it just kind of oozes a bad thought in your mind, and I think that's kind of what we're up against. So.
We had a bad marketing campaign from the get-go on that one. Mm-hmm. I mean, the perceptions were negative and pushed by, you know, that turned into the Frankenfood thing, and we're still trying to overcome that.
Well, and as Mike mentioned earlier, our attention span's about this long. You know, we deal in, I don't know, I'm not a tweeter guy, but, you know, so many characters. We don't really have much of an attention span. It's like the problem that's been uncovered with, what is it, dihydrogen monoxide. Millions of people have died from it, apparently, and they're finding it in all of our municipal water supplies. So think about that, dihydrogen monoxide, what a problem it is. So I'll leave that one.
And then you turn the mic over to me to follow up. But like, okay.
That's why I stay quiet.
All right, so I'm going to be...
Water.
I was just going to say it's water. I've got a bottle of water sitting in front of me, which is whatever Rob said. What was your question, Vanessa?
Rob answered from the, you know, just GMO in particular. GMO. I was going to the soybean side of it with you.
Well, actually, to my knowledge, genetically modifying an organism is a process. It's not, you know, weird science or anything like that. It's a really a process that you improve one the succeeding generations of plants. And that's, like Rob said, we've been doing that for thousands of years, and the monks back in 2,000 years ago did that with yeast and beer. So, you know, I've been drinking genetically modified libations for a long time. So,
products or things on our that we're trying to sell, we try to convince consumers our product, this product is better than what they had. So far, our best thing we're saying about GMOs to the public is, well, they're no worse than what we had. They're the same. I mean, well, that's not real catchy when you're marketing something. Well, you know, there's no better than or no worse. It's kind of the same. What's worse? But it's a benefit for the producer, and we're trying to now show them benefits that come along with that to consumers. But up till now, we've not made it very appealing. So it's been easier to say to when somebody says, "Could that be bad for you?" How many times have people based their opinions and their decisions based on, well, they say, you know, I heard, you know, and that's what we base so many decisions on, buying decisions in this country. It's kind of scary, really. I mean, when you stop and really think about, we don't really make very informed decisions on a lot of things.
Soybeans used to grow along the ground. They were more like ivy or weeds. There were a couple of varieties that grew along the ground, and there was one that grew up. And the Chinese, thousands of years ago, used a genetic variation and through breeding and through time, developed it so that soybeans could stand. I mean, can you imagine what kind of yield? You wouldn't grow soybeans if they grew like a weed. So, you know, we wouldn't have biodiesel, we wouldn't have soybean oil, you wouldn't have ink in your pen the way you do. But that is a variation. Hybrid corn, 100 years ago, you look at the corn yields in our country 100 years ago that were nowhere, and hybrid corn came along, and away we've gone, and we've been able to feed a world because of that. There was a researcher recently at Purdue, hate to use something outside of Illinois, but he developed a grain sorghum that otherwise in an African nation wasn't able to be produced. He found a way to make a genetic variation so that the sorghum would survive and saved millions of people from starvation. He won the World Food Prize recently in Des Moines. Do you think anybody who was afraid of starvation was saying, now, wait a minute, what did you do to that plant again? They were starving to death. And so, fortunately, you know, we don't have to be in that position. We should be thankful about that. So you talk about GMOs or you talk about genetic modification. You know, I saw a Microsoft had a commercial with a guy who uses technology, and he's using genes to help cure cancer. And I thought, well, that's pretty cool. I thought, now, what if you put somebody up there with food? People would be like, wait, what are you doing? But because he was in a different field, he was an expert, and he was great. So in some ways, it's just frustrating, but we need to continue to keep our message and to also point out that making genetic changes isn't necessarily a bad thing. Doesn't mean we should have free will, but it's not a bad thing.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, thanks, Vanessa. I just wanted to add, as we were talking about biotechnology and we're talking about the adaptation of some of the new sciences, probably what makes it even more difficult for a lot of people to build upon is we are truly building upon the knowledge that we've already exist. And as we continue to gain more knowledge, we apply more knowledge. But unless you have a fundamental understanding of the base knowledge, it becomes even more complex. And I think that's one of the issues we face. It's extremely complex. It's not simple science. It's extremely complex science. And there's not a fundamental building of that knowledge. And I think using analogies to it happens naturally where we've done it for years with soybeans or we've done it with yeast, I think that's good. But it still doesn't get the underlying thing that it is in the food and they don't understand it. And I don't know how to easily do it outside. I applaud some of the mom's things. I've had an opportunity to spend time with them. The light does come on. But it's almost a person to person. It's hard to villainize a person. It's easy to villainize a word. And I think just continuing to outreach and help people understand. I had a very unusual opportunity. I was on vacation with a family about a year ago, and we're at a restaurant, and some people that my daughter ran into at the beach, they were there. So we sat down and talked to them. They happened to be from Malibu, California. Yes, that's right, Malibu, California. We had an interesting conversation. She wasn't an anti.
She just needed knowledge. And I truly think just continuing to reach out is going to be the answer. They won't become geneticists. They won't. They don't want to be geneticists. They want to be a movie star, or they want to be whatever. So we have to provide them simple solutions and answers.
Okay. Had an interesting situation just in recent days in Oregon. Some counties had an anti-GMO ballot initiative. And then it came out that a lot of those counties also were the homes of some of the campuses of Oregon State. And on one of those campuses, a researcher feels he's very close to a cure for ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. But if that ban had been passed, his research would have come to an end because he was using that technology to help find a cure for ALS. The ban was defeated. But again, I thought, hey, if people realize there's more to that, I mean, the potential here to do a lot of good things that benefits a lot of people, maybe that helps resonate that, hey, there are benefits here, and we overlook a lot of those.
One more.
And I want to add on to that. I think some of the benefits of the science of biotechnology is an abundant food supply. You may have mentioned it earlier. We have thousands of choices in the grocery store. Before we had these kind of technological advances, we had bread lines, and lots of people in the world didn't have enough food to eat. And there are a lot of people that still don't have enough food to eat every day. But what we're doing with the technologies, and it's all across all kinds of technologies, whether it's equipment technologies or biotechnology, GPS technology, there's all kinds of technologies that farmers are using to produce more food. And that's our goal. That's my goal as a farmer, to raise as much food as I possibly can. And if I can create a good living out of it, so much the better. But my goal is to raise as much food as I can.
Thank you very much, Ron Moore. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I wanted to add what Ron said, because he says something I think is really important. It's impossible to prove an absence. And what I mean by that is, something doesn't occur, it's impossible to prove that it's going to occur. We're not currently having a Dust Bowl. Is it because we increased our conservation tillage through the use of modern technology, whether it be equipment technology or whether it be pesticide technology or genetically modified organisms, biotechnology? We had a terrible Dust Bowl a few years ago, 100 years ago, a little less than 100 years ago. That was because we had to feed a whole lot of people, and we had a whole lot of things we had to get done. We don't have that going on. So does that mean that our current technology is prevented? No, you can't prove that. If we could prove the absence, we'd be in a different place. But that's the biggest challenge, is you can't prove something that doesn't occur.
Okay. We have to take our first break. It is the top of the hour. Legal IDs are necessary back at the other studios. So we'll take our first break. When we come back, Katrina, we're going to draw you in and start talking about some of the customers, advertising, marketing, and labeling of products at the point of purchase, and get things from your perspective. You're listening to the Security Savings Bank Food Forum, Part 2 on 1330 WRAM, 1560 WBYS, 1590 WAIK, and AM 860 KWPC. Back with more in 10 minutes.